Adrian Hill, Reel One. Adrian, it's very kind of you to agree to talk to me about the drawings you did for the War Museum and about the First World War in general. And, of course, you have a special place in our affections since you are, in a sense, the museum's first artist. Although there were Ministry of Information artists, so far as the museum's concerned, you're the first artist to work for the museum's collection primarily. I think you joined up in the First World War at the very beginning, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I think that it was in the middle of November that I actually joined. In fact, I joined up the artists because I thought, well, the artists, I'm one of them, and here's the regiment for me. And when I lined up and they took my name and they said, what's your profession? I said, well, I'm an art student. And the officer leapt across and shook me by the hand and said, oh, that's splendid, the first we've had. And I said, what do I do now? And he said, well, just wait until you're called up, we've got your name. And I said, in the meantime, my brother had been anxious for me to join the HAC, of which he was a member, and my uncle had been a member of it. And so he said, if you don't hear from the artists within a week, I've got you a proposer and a seconder. And I said, I didn't hear from the artists. And so I, in a way, innocently deserted and joined the HJC.
And you were in England then at the beginning of the war,
yes,
I suppose.
Yes, I was. And we had a mixed sort of, what do you call it, training on the canvas and in billets. And finally at the Tower of London. That was in the end of 15 and 16. And I have written, and you in the Imperial War Museum has corroborated, that the shooting of the famous naval spy Muller was,
yes.
And now I've forgotten the date, but I could look it up. The point there is that I happened to be on duty as a corporal when he was arrested, and I had to select a party, I think it was called a party, to watch over him with me in charge and see that he was alive and well all night until 6 o'clock the next morning, where he was shot. I said, the HAC, thank goodness, weren't used for the shooting. They had a party from the Grenadier Guards that came down. But I said, I watched over him from 6 o'clock, giving him exercise, cutting up his meals, and he wrote a lot. He spoke perfect English, a tall, middle-aged man in a grey, long grey coat, and he talked to me very freely about his life, and I got to know him so well that it seemed to be becoming a nightmare. And I must cut a long story short, because it was a long, long night, but what I did admire him so much for, that he was able to sleep and wake up, and I had to tell him that this was the morning, and he rubbed his eyes and said, oh, good. And the next thing that I can remember very clearly was a glass of brandy being taken into his cell, and when he came out and we formed up, I gave the order to march up to the rifle range, which was down in the casements of the Tower of London. He changed step, he got into step as he was out of step. And I said, when it was over, I reported to the colonel in charge, and he said, well, you look a bit green, Hill, you can have the day off and your troop.
Yes.
I said, that was my first instance of what war was all about.
And you went over to France in 1916?
Yes, yes, and joined in the I think it was the middle. Anyhow, the drawings that I used to make at the top of my paper when I wrote home all seemed to be of trees in full bloom and rather pretty country. But we arrived on the Somme, and one of the stickiest times, I think, that the army had encountered on that front, anyhow. I had made a lot of drawings, by the way, on my way up. And when they found out that I was possibly better with a pencil than paper than with a rifle, which I didn't seem to know which end really was the one that I aimed at the enemy, they made me a scout and a sniper. I said, that sounds very odd, but in point of fact, I used to sit and observe and make little drawings rather than shoot at the enemy, so that I was well versed in drawing in very odd positions and under very unique environment.
Did you make drawings actually for the gun emplacements, so that a particular section of the front would be recorded?
Yes, I did do that. And on one memorable occasion, we were having a lot of bother. We were facing Oppy Wood on the Somme, and we were being sniped from one of the shattered trees. We didn't want the batteries to obliterate the whole wood, and so I was asked whether I could go out into no man's land and see whether I could get somewhere near to where this chap was bothering us. And as luck would have it, and I crawled out on my tummy, fell into every shell hole, we got out again, and in the end I was within 200 or 300 yards, I think, and I did see very skillfully where this fellow was working from. The tree was so arranged naturally that he could put up ladders and things and turn them almost into... They went to endless pains to camouflage their activities. And having made the drawing, which I said was a very elaborate one, because I counted the trees and so that they really would stop firing any more to the right or to the left, and brought it back. Unfortunately, I had to do the whole thing over again, because the sketches that I had made covered with mud and it was very slippery going. But I did make a very careful drawing, and it did go back to the batteries, and they were very precise in their shooting, and that was that. And they thanked me very much indeed and said I'd done a good job.
Yes.
And I did feel that I was really of use.
Quite right, yes. It's interesting, we've got in the museum a number of drawings done for specific purposes like this.
Yes.
We've got some drawings, for example, done by William T. Wood in the Balkans, which he started life as an observer, and yes, then he was commissioned to do pictures for the museum as well, oil paintings, as well as observation drawings.
Yes, I'm delighted to hear that, because it seems where the artist can score over the camera.
That's right, yes. Talking of trees, did you actually see any of these camouflage trees, these phony trees that were made?
Yes, but I've got no recollection of anything that that made me think they were very clever or very real. I've got a blockage there. I think I heard more about it than saw them.
You did quite a large number of drawings then in the line, Adrian.
Yes, I believe you have over 100, something like 180, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
You did some for the Honour Artillery Company, which belonged to them.
Yes, they have 80 of mine in their armoury house. And in a way, I was not under orders, I was just drawing mostly the things that struck me as being so horrific or so unreal that I thought I must get this down because this will never happen again.
Yes.
Trees will never be blasted like this. Holes can't be made in any building like this, or a whole village absolutely obliterated.
Yes.
Just the stark remains.
Yes.
And the skylark singing above. this is the thing that I must get.
Yes, that's right. Mm. And so the subjects were your choice?
Well, mostly they were, I think. Every now and again, of course, they would say, look, can you, as a sniper, would it help you to have your sketchbook with you? And I had a nest somewhere in the trenches, what we called a nest. And then I would look round and they'd say, well, we would like to know what the terrain is. Can you make a careful drawing? Or do you think we can get round from there and there? Certain instructions I was under. But I think in the end it was anything that's opposite to us would be interesting to record.
Yes.
And so I was given a lot of privileges to do the villages and the general terrain for record purposes, as you know, this is what it was like.
Yes.
Rather than he did this because we wanted to know.
Yes, I see. And the drawings you did for the artillery company then led to your commission for
yes.
The National War Museum in the first place,
and that's then, right.
The Imperial War Museum.
Mm. They were passed on from the commanding officer to Major Beggles Wilson, who plays a part in my appointment, I think.
And he was not a member of the artillery company.
No, he was a Canadian one, Major Beggles Wilson. He came over as a war correspondent. And I think then, because I was introduced to him by my CO as one who had started collecting trophies, because it appeared from his story that nobody was thinking that this war was going to be, as we all hoped it was going to be at that time, the war to end wars. There's nothing done in the way of collecting relics, and he'd been busy doing it. In fact, he'd got the shop window of a shop at where we came back to rest, a place called Hedan, H-E-S-D-I-N, and he'd already collected quite a number of trophies. And so he was interested in the pictorial side, which he felt we hadn't thought about. And having seen the drawings that I had done for the regiment, he said, well, you've got the chap who can do it. Get on with it. And he took over from then. And I was nobody's child. I was seconded, but I wasn't commissioned. And he had his own ideas, this is Major Wilson, of how things could be accelerated. They even got permission to take me to Paris and have me fitted up in what the French thought might do as a uniform for a British officer with special duties as an artist, the rank of a special war artist. But I said that was discounted after time, that couldn't be done. And so I, before getting my proper commission as from the War Office, I was roaming around as a private or as an officer incognito, or as a very privileged private, because I was joining messes and being asked whether I would do a drawing for General so-and-so. And it was a very, very interesting period.
Adrian, you were commissioned then, soon after that, and there was a section formed, actually, for the war trophies, collection of war trophies. Is that how it was?
Yes, that's right. We had a general and his assistant, and I was the sort of tame artist. I had instructions from you over in England what part in the news you felt was interesting to be recorded, and so I made my own way up and my own way back. And if you say, did you walk all the way, I'd say, naturally, well, that's a good question, because we were driven a good way back. It was the retreat which turned into the towards the end of the war, And so our staff, which was quite small and had one car, and that car the general liked to use for collecting trophies down at the bases. And he was very annoyed when I had my sort of instructions from England to go up to the Somme or go up to Arras or Albert or Ypres. And so he indented for a motorcycle for me. I was horrified because I don't think I took a long time, I remember, trying to ride an ordinary bicycle. So I pleaded with him, but he wouldn't have it. He said, then you'll be free, Hill, to go out and do your own jobs and we can carry on our jobs, which seemed to me to be giving me the most dangerous proposition. I felt I ought to have danger money for it. It came, it was a 1914 Douglas, and the driver of the car was instructed to give me the necessary lessons to be able to provide myself with my own transport. I did learn how to do it. I always felt that I had a wild beast to control between my legs. And having done the journey on two or three occasions run into all kinds of difficulties, which made my journey longer than it should have been, and when I arrived to be able to draw, I was in such a trembling state of agitation, I could hardly make a good drawing.